All right, good morning, everybody. How's day two going for everyone? Good? Woo-hoo! All right, excellent. I'm back again. You may have noticed me. I did a little session at the end of the day yesterday talking about social media, so all of you better be taking note of the hashtag here, Right to Repro Handbook, tweeting about this as well. Get it out there. So I am very, very excited to be back at ARCS talking about this project in particular. Some of you may recall 2 years ago at the first ARCS conference, I had the pleasure of being able to present at that conference and announce that we had received the IMLS grant that was supporting this handbook. And now I've come full circle and able to announce it's out. Thank you. So the handbook has been co-published by the IMA and AAM, and we have published this as a digital publication in which the IMA oversaw the overall content coordination and the integration and entry of the content into the OSCE toolkit that we used to produce the handbook, while AAM undertook major marketing and distribution of the publication. As I mentioned, we are very, very fortunate with this project to have been supported by both the IMLS through a national leadership grant, as well as support from the Getty Foundation for the utilization of the OSCE toolkit. But this project was far from being just me by any means. While I edited the overall content and served as one of the contributors, there was a host of other colleagues that really did the heavy lifting on this publication, and their knowledge and expertise can really be seen in the pages of the publication. In addition to their contributions, we had a very extensive legal review panel that reviewed all of the content of the publication to ensure we weren't giving any errant legal advice, pointing anybody in the wrong direction. And this is a panel that has brought together general counsel at several museums and libraries, other leading copyright and IP attorneys at some of top law firms in the country, as well as bringing in people from Art Store and Pipe Arts Group. Virginia Rutledge, who's noted on here, was former legal counsel for Creative Commons. Jeff Kennard, who's first on the list there, was the legal counsel who was the lead on the CAA's recent code for fair use in the visual arts. Now, making this a digital publication was quite strategic. We knew that this is a subject that is going to change and change frequently. And so many, many, many years ago, there was the idea of, hey, we need a handbook. We need a guidebook for rights and reproductions. But everyone knew that as soon as we published this, it would be out of date. So some of you might be familiar. There was a thing called the Rarin Wiki that existed for a number of years that kind of served in the interim, that, okay, we could do something digital, we could update it, but it had the shortcomings and the downfall of the fact that it was a wiki, which meant that people could put anything they wanted there, which meant that there was a lot of bad spam and pornography, and more than one case where somebody went in and deleted the entire site and we had to recover it. So there were a lot of issues and problems with it, which led us to completely locking down the site, which negates the point of a wiki altogether. So, move back ahead to several years down the road, 2011, 2012, we were first starting talking about this idea that, hey, we really need to do something. Digital publication had evolved so much. There were so many more opportunities and advances, and things like tablets had come out that didn't exist before, and there were e-reader applications for desktop computers. So there was a lot more flexibility and possibilities with this, and realizing that there was so much content that we could then update this on a regularly scheduled basis, that it wasn't something that as soon as we printed something, and here's your print run, and we're not going to update this for another 20 years, but oh, I'm sorry, there was a new court case that came down, or a new code that came out, and now this is obsolete and doesn't fit everything anymore. So it was quite strategic in making it a digital publication. As this, we kind of threw everything against the wall in this one. So it covers everything from an introduction to intellectual property and the law and ethics and code behind rights and reproduction practices for cultural institutions. And we've really tried to bring this publication into regular, ordinary, everyday language that everybody can understand and get it out of the legalese where you go, I've read this three times upside down, backwards, and I was doing handstands at the same time and I still don't get it. could somebody explain it to me? So we've really tried to bring this down and make it understandable, because I've even read so many court cases where I'm like, huh? So we've really tried to bring it back to that. We've taken this and really looked at this from a very holistic point of view, that this is not just for art museums. It's not just for history museums or historic houses or archives. We've really tried to cover the gambit here. So there is a lot of applicability to library and archive collections as well as art collections. We kind of cover a little bit of everything. We break it down in looking at internal uses and assessing what you have in your collection and how that can be leveraged, but also then looking at it from when people are coming to you and say, hey, you've got great stuff and we want to use it. And then you go, oh, how do I license that to you and what contracts do I need? So to that end, and partly because this was a digital publication, we have some very, very, very extensive appendices in this. One of the appendices on document and contract templates has over 100 pages of examples. If this was a print publication, there's no way we could have included that many examples and varied examples from various institutions, so you can see how different institutions have tackled some of these things. So when you look at licensing agreements and the cover letters that are going with those, we have multiple examples from a variety of institutions in the United States that we're able to put into that. All of the references and resources and footnotes, of which there's almost 800, all of those, anything that includes a hyperlink, it's directly hyperlinked. It can take you immediately out of the publication and to that site, to that resource directly. You're not having to make a note of it and type it in later and try to find it. You can immediately go right to it. Now, I want to tell you a story about two publications. So, in doing the handbook, we actually ended up doing two books because one just wasn't enough. So a year ago, we released an online preview of the handbook. Both of these publications we were able to export and create within the OSCE toolkit. And doing the preview of the handbook a year in advance really gave us a great opportunity to think about some of the stuff that we had put into the final handbook. In the final handbook, again, all produced within OSCE, we've exported as two different files. So you have the opportunity to purchase either an EPUB or a MOBI file, depending on what type of platform you're looking at utilizing the handbook in. So EPUB is going to be anything on an iPad or a desktop computer. MOBI is the proprietary file type if you use a Kindle. So if you have a Kindle, that's going to be the one that you're going to want to get there. So again, looking at that, why digital, but why OSCE as well? Part of that was through the Getty Foundation and with the IMA. The IMA Lab, which is our technology and research arm of the museum, actually had funding and grant support from the Getty Foundation to produce the OSCE toolkit and its suite of tools available on GitHub for free for use that everyone could access, and how we could look at this, create this living document, add all those templates, link to the primary source materials, but then also be able to leverage it and work with it on the fly. And even through this project, working with the lab and with the OSCE Toolkit, we really discovered that there was stuff that we didn't even know OSCE Toolkit could do. Like, we could export it on the fly to a preview, but then also export to EPUB and MOBI and all these different things. So I'm going to show you a little bit about using OSCE. I am not even fractionally the tech person, so take it with my scout's honor here. It's very easy to use. It's very intuitive. It's very user-friendly. Everything is, you select what you want to use, you create this overall publication shell, and then from there, you create your individual pieces, and you just link them all together. So you create this overall shell, you break it down to your individual sections or chapters of your publication, you link those in. And then from there, creating your sections and your chapters is as simple as copy and paste from your edited Word document. It automatically comes in and formats all of your footnotes for you. It recognizes their placement within that Word text, generates the footnotes out from there. One thing we did discover was we had a couple of chapters. You may have remembered my mentioning there were almost 800 footnotes in this book. We had a couple of chapters where it kept timing out, and I couldn't get the last 25 to 50 footnotes in a couple chapters to add, because a couple of the chapters had over 200 footnotes in them individually. And we couldn't figure out what it was, and it was OSCE had never supported a publication with that many footnotes and that many footnotes within an individual section. So they had to go in and rewrite the code and get it so that it could support more footnotes. Sorry, we're a little text heavy. The kind of hardest part of OSCE was placement of figures and any of the images within the publication. That required a little more hands-on guidance of uploading the individual image files and then actually placing within the text where you wanted those images to be rendered and placed within it. But again, it wasn't rocket science by any means. So I'll show you a little bit about how actually doing this as two publications and starting that preview and doing that over a year in advance of the final publication coming out meant that then once we got to that final publication, we were working in OSCE to finalize it, we had a lot of the design decisions already sorted. So you'll see here in the preview, we decided, you know what, we're text heavy, so let's put some nice images as facing plate images before the content, figure out how we want to treat things like all the contributor lists and the acknowledgement for our grant for support and funders, which you'll see in the final publication is very mirrored and looks very similar. It also gave us the really great opportunity with the preview to think about our color palette, to think about how we were going to visually handle case studies and pull them out with this different color block with the red bars coming down the side. And again, looking at the final publication, it looks very similar. We were able to translate a lot of that from that online preview into those final EPUB and MOBI files and not be having to really spend a lot of time in the design and formatting at the end. So getting into the final publication, this really has been the opportunity where, of course, we have the lovely disclaimer at the beginning, because most of us who were contributing and writing on the publication are not lawyers. Do not take this as formal legal advice, just a friendly word of caution there. If you get sued, you can't blame us. So sorry. But we also tried to include some things in the final publication where you kind of test your knowledge. So we have a couple of these little case studies that we put in there where it's a little bit of a quiz and answer and a little bit of a, have you been paying attention to what you've already learned before? So this is part of a chapter that's all about assessing what you have in your institution, how you assess what's in your collection, what the copyright status is of those objects. Is it public domain? Is it an orphan work? Where do you research? And all these different scenarios. And so we've thrown in a handful of these different scenarios and how you can look at those and figure them out. We've also gone through, because it's a very, very common and recurring question that we get is, we're a small institution. We started putting our collection online, and now we've got people coming to us and asking us how to use it. Does anybody have a contract, or do I need a request form, or what information do I have to capture? So we've really tried to break this down about that overall request process, either as having to be on the end of processing when somebody comes to you with a request, or having to be on the reverse side and be the one making that request to another institution if there's something that your institution wants to use in an exhibition or for a publication, and how you go about that process. We've gone as far as even including sample workflows and when you are going through this process, here's some sample language for your email communications, and really tried to give an overall framework of how you can get through all of this. So again, a lot of case studies from the contributing authors about how they've done a lot of these processes at their institutions, what it meant for them. For the Brooklyn Museum of Art, they did a major copyright project. We modeled a lot of what the IMA's project in doing rights research at our institution, actually off the Brooklyn Museum as well. They did a wonderful job of this, of educating their different departments on rights information, bringing in interns, and specifically not looking at the museum graduate programs for interns for this project, but looking at legal interns and bringing them in. And there are a lot of law schools that have students focusing in art and museum and nonprofit law or intellectual property law, and cultural institutions really deal with that a lot. So you have a lot of law students that are very interested in that area. In my experience, it has gotten to the point where it's actually easier to bring in law students and then teach them the museum side of what they need to do to complete their internship and do this research than it is to try to teach the legal and IP stuff to museum studies students. Again, I made reference, we have over 100 pages of document and contract templates in the publication. All of these are actual using documents from the contributors' institutions. You'll notice the letterhead and logos of the institutions at the top of these here. This is something where we didn't want these templates just to be mock templates, but these are actually live, used everyday documents and examples from these institutions that have been vetted by legal counsel and are something that you can model your own after. Again, those references and resources, everything's hyperlinked. It'll take you right out of the publication immediately to those resources. You can get to that and immediately reference that information there. They all work, I promise. I spent many, many, many late nights double checking that all of those hyperlinks worked and went to the correct place and adjusting a lot of hyperlinks. So if for some reason you find something that doesn't, let us know. We'll get it fixed. But yes, so as I mentioned, it's out. So September 1st of this year, we officially released the handbook. It's been very well received so far. We're happy to be able to put it at an affordable price point. So for non-AAM members, it's $4.99. AAM members, it's $1.99. Make sure you find me or one of my lovely emissaries in the crowd and get a bookmark. The bookmark has a code on it that you can get it a dollar off, which means as an AAM member, you could get the handbook for 99 cents. So dig in your couch cushions, skip the morning coffee, you can get it. The last thing we wanted was to create a publication that would be so expensive that people couldn't afford it, either as an individual or as an institution, and even as students. We have gotten to the point now where we've actually been informed of several graduate programs that have already put this on their syllabus. For some of their collections management programs. And at the last count I heard, we were sitting at about 500 copies have already been sold since September 1st. I know, I'm sorry. Some of you may have seen it. The most recent issue of Museum Magazine that just came out at the beginning of the month, there is an excerpt of one of the chapters from the handbook in that, so it gives you a little preview about the handbook. So I encourage you to take a look and read that. And know that we're still working on this. So this is a publication that, since it is digital, part of what we've done is we're working on pulling together a sustainability committee for the publication that will review the content every about 12 to 18 months, see what updates are need to be done. So again, a court case comes down and has a major impact on the field, we'll make reference to that. CAA or AMD puts out some new guideline or code, we can add that content in and make sure that this publication remains relevant and timely to the field and what we're dealing with. Now I know a lot of you have gone digital, but I still heart paper. And I get it. I do. I'm a bookworm. In a previous life, I worked in a bookstore. I love books. I have many. So for those of you who like paper and like to be able to make all your notes and flag stuff and feel it in your hands, we are working on a PDF version of the handbook that will be exported from the EPUB. So we'll retain that formatting and style and design. So it basically would be sold then as a print-on-demand. Fair warning, though, should you want to print it, it's a doorstop. So when it prints out, it is going to end up being somewhere about 450 to 500 pages. So again, that's kind of part of why we went digital and how we were able to put this at the under $5 price point was we didn't have the overhead of a print run and how many pages this would be if we were to include it in that. And that's it. So I'm happy to answer questions. I also have, aside from the printed version here, I have an iPad with me with the handbook loaded on it as well. I'm happy to show it to you and get a little more information and take it for a test spin. Thank you.